Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. A new era will dawn at WITF in just a few weeks. Ron Hetrick has been named the new president and CEO of WITF, succeeding Kathleen Pavelko, who is retiring after 19 years. Ron Hetrick has been at WITF in several roles since the year 2000 and has an extensive background in technology, finance, operations, and human resources. His experiences will be valuable with the changing media, technology, and educational landscape. Appearing on today's program are Ron Hetrick, WITF's new president and CEO, and Kathleen Pavelko, who is retiring as president and CEO. A pleasure to have the two of you on the program.
Nice to be back.
Thank you, Scott.
So, Ron, let's start with your role. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
How do you see your role as president and CEO?
So as CEO, I see myself being a chief steward of public media for Central Pennsylvania, looking to bring the great programs and services that we do to as many communities and to as many people as we can.
What's your vision for the future for WITF?
So I've been with WITF now for over 18 years, and it's humbling to be sitting across the table from you because you and I have had a long relationship together, and I think I've actually fixed your computer from time to time.
I think you have, too.
Yes. So in those 18 years, you and I have both worked to implement the vision for public media that Kathleen has brought to this community. And thinking about my time here, I've spent almost half of my life at WITF in bringing those public media services to our region. So my vision for WITF is simple. It's about connecting and reflecting. It's about better connecting to the communities that we serve and better reflecting the diversity found within those communities.
Now, when you say diversity, what kind of diversity are you talking about?
All types, whether it's racial, ethnic, socioeconomic, all the different types of individuals who populate our great region, make sure that we can connect and bring our programs and services to them.
You know, Ron, something that it's not just WITF, but traditional media and public media overall, one of the areas in which we've struggled is to bring younger people into our audiences. Now, WITF, obviously, we're very, very strong with children's programming across the country, whether it's TV, radio, or different media. But those who are, you know, once they've graduated from being very young children to teenagers, young adults, starting families of their own, that's very important because the kind of information, the kind of programming that we have helps to let those people become good citizens, which is one of our goals, one of our missions.
Absolutely. And as a young father, I appreciate that. Being a consumer of the many kids services that we offer, both on television, via digital apps, and at events, you're right that connection can become lost at a certain point in a child's evolution and a family's evolution. So one of the many things that we're going to address in the first several months of my presidency will be to rethink about our marketing efforts to better tell the WITF story to our region and not only let the people who we are closely connected to know about the great things that we do, but try to get the word out there and let those that don't know about us know about the great things that we do.
Kathleen Pavelko, want to thank you for your service and your friendship over the past 19 years here at WITF. There have been a lot of changes under your watch, not just with WITF, but I mentioned that media landscape, education landscape. A lot of things happened in the past two decades.
It's been a very busy 19-plus years. And basically, my entire career has been engulfed by the media transformation that began with a decline in newspapers, the transformation brought on by the internet, and also by big changes in how public media is funded, an increase in the number of donors, some back and forth on federal funding over many years, the loss of state funding. We have a small amount of it restored. So all of those required navigation. But let me just say that almost every day was a fun day here at WITF, and it's a very rewarding experience to have led this organization.
Well, and you should be proud because WITF, I think, is looked upon as one of the anchor institutions in Central Pennsylvania, and that says a lot. I mean, that makes me very proud to work at WITF, but it's something to uphold and keep that going and to keep that growing all the time. What was your thinking behind that? What was your goals? What did you have in mind, that specific agenda you had in mind?
When I arrived at WITF, there was nothing broken, but it wasn't moving or growing, moving forward or growing in the way that I thought that it had the potential to do. So when I arrived, it was pretty clear to me that one of the things that was holding us back was our current location in a 1958 elementary school. And today, when I drive up to the Public Media Center, I know precisely how I spent the first 7 years of my tenure here, which is working with the board to create a strategic plan and then devise a capital campaign that ultimately funded and built the Public Media Center. But a building is a building, right? It's a center for public media, but it's also a media center for the public. And I think this touches on one of Ron's goals, which is to increase community engagement, that face-to-face media platform, right? Not just audio or television or your mobile device. And that, I think, is one of the key tools that he will be able to use to increase the diversity and size of our audience. When you're face-to-face with people, you have the best opportunity to hear what their concerns are, to meet those concerns, and to shape programs that will help their lives.
Ron, I think that's exactly right. Many people who, when they come into the Public Media Center for the first time, they say, oh, this is a great facility, and they talk about how large it is. Many of them are not aware of the number of events that we have in this building on maybe a daily basis, but at least a weekly basis. And so right that it provides that opportunity for face-to-face engagement. And that's something that not just we, but all media should be doing nowadays, not just in a way of, okay, here's your TV broadcast, here is your radio broadcast, go to our website and you can read about this, but to have that type of engagement, right?
Absolutely. And it's more than just the Public Media Center for WITF. The Public Media Center is wonderful, and it's a great resource for the community. But at the same time, given the diversity of our region, there are not always opportunities for individuals in underserved communities to come to the Public Media Center. So one of the many things that we're going to look to do is to bring some of our core and anchor events to local communities. For example, our very popular Ready, Set, Go kindergarten program. We're in our ninth year this year doing it. Happens at the Public Media Center, draws about 1,000 individuals, and is well-received event. This coming fall, we're looking to bring that to downtown Lancaster so that that event can be received and experienced by individuals within walking distance who have access to public education so that they can also experience that great parent-child playdate that gets children ready for that journey to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. And just a much smaller than that, on a scale that's much smaller, Smart Talk road trips that we've done over the past mm-hmm. 2 years. Just, as the host of the program, I enjoy so much being able to look into people's eyes, mm-hmm. See that body language, have that face-to-face conversation. It's the same kind of thing. But the Ready, Set, Go kindergarten events have just been some of the most popular that we've had. If you go by the number of people are amazed when I tell them that there are 1,000 children and their parents here with a lot of other vendors and, the people who are reaching those children who are about to go into kindergarten. It's just an amazing event. There are so many others out there, Central PA Smelling Bee and all that. Kathleen, taking a step back to Ron's selection as president and CEO, did you have any influence into this? I mean, obviously, you've worked very closely with Ron as a senior vice president over the years. Did you have any input into Ron's selection?
I was not part of the search committee or the search process. I supported the process, but I view the selection and evaluation of a CEO as the core responsibility of a governing board. And WITF has a very good governing board. It understands governance. So they immediately said, we're going to do a national search. They sought the assistance of a search firm to help organize it, and they went ahead and did that. Look, this position, if I may say candidly, is a very desirable position on the national job scale. And so a national search was the right thing to do. And what the the board reported out yesterday at the board meeting was they had hundreds of contacts with people to assemble the portfolio of candidates. They got it down to 25 or 30 candidates. Then they had a series of first-round interviews, second-round interviews, presentations. They really ran these candidates through their paces.
Ron is nodding vigorously.
He is, yeah. And the result is that whoever is selected can be assured to the community that they have gone through the most arduous possible process to achieve the best possible selection. And let me just say that I believe that Ron is the right person at the right time for this organization to move it forward. Because my goal for WITF has always been not only for it to be successful while I was CEO, but to position it for success in the years after I was CEO.
Ron, that has to give you a great deal of satisfaction to know that 20 or 30 people initially and that you're the one who emerges as the president and CEO.
I am humbled and honored to have been selected and given Kathleen's mentorship and leadership over these many years, proud to have been part of the team that has helped bring the stability that we have now at WITF and the foundation from which we can continue to grow.
Let's talk for just a moment about the future and technology. Again, being here for so long, I can remember some of those early 2000 conversations where we were talking about, the internet was fairly new. Now, digital is, everyone is doing. So, Ron, you are very much plugged into the future and what the future looks like. How do you see the future? And how do you see WITF fitting into the future when we're talking about technology?
So one of our biggest opportunities is to remain relevant and connected to our audiences on the platforms that they use. And that primarily results in the digital experience. So WITF, through efforts right now like PA Post, have done great things in entering that digital foray, digital storytelling and digital experiences on multiple devices. But there's more that we can do. We have our national content that we partner with PBS and NPR on. There's additional opportunities for WITF to be present on those platforms, making sure that whether it's a digital application, a digital platform, or a new social media platform, that we're there and available and we're telling our story, we're listening, and we're connecting to those audiences.
You know, we talked about face-to-face engagement, but there are many more opportunities to engage with an audience this way.
There are. Communities can exist in the digital realm as well.
Hmm. Well, we're almost out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations again, Ron.
Thank you.
And you begin your presidency on April 2nd. Kathleen, your era ends. I don't know. Are you going to leave a note for Ron like George Bush did for Bill Clinton on the desk?
You know, we had that face-to-face communication. That's what happens
okay.
with Ron and me.
So April 1st is your last
no
day.
No fooling, yeah.
This may be your last time on the air at WITF.
Oh, you're not going to have me back and talk about something else?
Well, I didn't think about it, but I guess you sound like you're clamoring for that, so we may.
I love being on the mic with you. It most likely will be my last interview as the CEO, but I am a careful listener to the program, so you can expect that you'll hear from me from time to time.
Well, what do you want your legacy to be?
I'll tell you the laughingly funny story about that and then something more serious. What I want never to happen is some successor of mine, whether that's Ron or someone after Ron, to look back at the era in which I was the CEO and say, what was she thinking? That's what I don't want to happen. What I do want to happen is for people to look back at the era in which I was the leader of the organization and say, some of the success that we have now at that point in the future can be traced back to the activities and the leadership and the services that we launched in that era. That would make me proud.
Kathleen Pavelko is WITF's retiring CEO and president, and Ron Hetrick is WITF's new president and CEO. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Check out upcoming topics for Smart Talk at WITF.org/smarttalk. You can see some of the shows we're working on, such as car insurance rates throughout Pennsylvania, a Smart Talk road trip to the Hershey Theater, and an FBI expert who talks about art theft. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk.
Good evening. I'm Judy Woodruff on the NewsHour tonight. Grounded, the Boeing 737 MAX.
Joining us for this part of Smart Talk is one of America's most respected journalists, Judy Woodruff. Ms. Woodruff, you can see her at anchoring PBS NewsHour every night at 6 on WITF-TV. She'll be speaking at Lehigh University next Tuesday, March 19th. Her topic is speaking across political differences today in America, and it's a topic we'll explore today with Judy Woodruff. Ms. Woodruff, welcome to the program.
Scott, hi. It's great to be with you.
If you are a listener out there that would like to ask a question or make a comment to Judy Woodruff, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Judy Woodruff, why this topic, speaking across political differences?
Well, first of all, it's great to talk to you, and I'm really looking forward to being at Lehigh next week. They came to me and said, we'd love for you to think about a topic like this, and it's something I know that's been on the minds of a lot of us. It's been on my mind, and we sort of came to a mutual agreement that this was something that's important to address. I don't think anybody has the final answers for what are we going to do about it. But I don't think anyone denies that right now we are in about as polarized a political environment as we've ever seen.
And, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit later to ask you some of your opinions on how we can bridge that divide. But how did we get to this point? That's always a question I think that a lot of us ask ourselves is, how did we get to this point in America where we are so divided?
Well, I think a lot of different factors have played into this. Of course, we've always had differing political parties with different views. That's what's made our democracy as strong as it is. And so it's a healthy part of who we are in the United States and what the American people believe in. But I think what's happened over the last few decades is as the parties have defined themselves not only as having disagreements, but as demonizing the other party, describing people who disagree with them as not only their adversary, but their enemy, someone they just don't respect. That has built and built and built. And we saw what happened in the 2000 election when the country was very divided over those ballots in Florida. You remember that the Al Gore went down to defeat after the Supreme Court determined that the results, that George W. Bush was the winner. And then you go forward. There was 9/11. It was a point when the country seemed to come together, but then the country divided again over the war in Iraq. And I could go on and on, but there are a series of, I think, events in our nation's history that have led us to being more divided. And I think, frankly, Scott, and I'm going to be quiet after this, but I think the media plays into this because of, it's all this wonderful technology that allows us to communicate with each other and get information in an instant, but it also plays into those differences and exaggerates them to some extent and makes it so pronounced that people, I think, feel more invested in staking out their positions on either side of the spectrum. I just think that's led to the polarization.
What you're referring to, 24-hour news networks that feature many opinion programs. They call themselves news networks, but a lot of the programming is made up of opinion programs, social media, talk radio. But a question I have to ask, does it really matter if we identify those causes? Because those factors I just listed and you were referring to, they're not going away.
No, they're not going away, and it is a fact of life. And in fact, it's likely to get even worse, or even more so. If, you know, there are a lot of people who don't think it's unhealthy, who think it's great that we can more and more people can express themselves, and that we can have this spirited debate. But I think it's something that we have to keep talking about as the American people. We need to keep having this conversation about just how divided do we want to be? Do we want to continue to demonize the people we disagree with? Are they truly, are we going to consider them un-American or unpatriotic if they don't agree with us? I mean, I think those are the positions that it's worth continuing to talk about and continuing to consider whether this is the way we want to have discussion and dialogue in this country. Is this the way we want to reach decision about the most important questions of our time?
President Donald Trump dominates the news today. And I mean, every president dominates the news. It is the one person that gets the most news coverage. But Donald Trump is probably unlike any other president in a number of ways. But one is that he is looked at as very divisive. And there are those who, even though you listed the history from the past 20 years of how we became so divided, who will point at the president and say, he's the reason that we are so divided. Then again, there's a school of thought that says that President Trump is a symptom of that division. What do you think about that?
I think he is certainly a factor in the division. I mean, this is a president who enjoys and who believes it's smart for him to employ some of his divisive tactics. For him, it is one of the arrows in his quiver, and he uses it regularly. And the White House acknowledges this. It's not a, you know, they say this president is strong because he stands his ground, because he stands for what he believes in. So I don't put all the blame, certainly not, on President Trump. I do think he's one of the factors. I don't know whether you'd call it a symptom. I'm not sure. I think of President Trump as a symptom, but I think it, because I think of him as an active player in what's going on right now. But I think that, you know, we're a big country. We're over 300 million people, and people have the ability to think for themselves. They don't have to be pulled around by the nose by one political leader at one end of the spectrum or another one. People can make up their own minds, and so I would argue that, you know, that sometimes perhaps we pay maybe too much attention to what the president is saying, what the president's doing, and when we ought to be thinking for ourselves.
When you say we, are you talking about the media? You're talking about Americans overall?
I'm talking about all of us. I frankly have long believed, well before this president came into office, that there was just far more attention paid to the office of the person who's president than there needs to be. If you look at how the news media presence in Washington, D.C., where the White House is located in the Capitol, most of the press corps is focused on the White House and on reporting everything that the president says. And this has been the case for several presidents. It didn't start with Donald Trump. I think that, you know, there's much more going on and to be reported on. And I think what this leads to is that we end up elevating this person. Yes, they are very powerful, no question about it. They make decisions that affect all of us. But, you know, they're covered not only as a political leader, as a national security leader, they're covered as a rock star, they're covered as a cultural leader. And I think, you know, it's important to spread it out a little bit and pay attention to what's going on around the rest of the country. I'm really old-fashioned that way, but I think we need to pull back some of this nonstop spotlight on the White House.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. Our guest during this portion of the program, we're honored to have her on the program today, NewsHour anchor and managing editor Judy Woodruff, talking about the great divide in America and how to reach across that divide. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. If you have a question or a comment, you also can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at @SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have a phone call from Bill in Lancaster. Bill, you're on the air.
I'm I'm Hi, Judy.
Really old-fashioned that way. But
hello? Can you turn your radio down, Bill? Because, yeah, just want to make sure you're not hearing us two different places. Go ahead.
I'm trying to do that. All right. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
We're honored to have her on the program today. All right. Hello. Am I speaking to Ms. Woodruff?
Hey, Bill, we're losing you here. You're going to have to turn your radio down, I'm going to continue our conversation with Judy Woodruff. Folks, when you do call in, please have your radio turned down and listen to your telephone as you're asking a question and making your comments overall. So, I mean, here is the big question, Ms. Woodruff. How do we get across this divide? How do we bring Americans back together again? I mean, I don't know if we'll ever bring back together like we were post 9/11 or post World War II, but where we stop vilifying one another, and even if we have differences, we don't call that person an enemy of the people.
I think it's going to take several things. I think one thing that needs to happen, and in a way it contradicts what I just said about too much attention on Washington, on the White House. I do think that it helps if we have political leaders who send a message that we need to respect one another and we need to listen to one another, and leaders who call on us to be the best that we can be, and who don't demonize the other side. But the other part of this has to come, Scott, from Americans all over the country. We have the ability in our communities, in our towns and cities, wherever we live around this country, we have the ability to be more respectful, to sit down and get to know people who are different from us, and to talk to them and to understand where they're coming from. I don't think enough of that is going on right now. I think a lot of people live in their own, we're all busy, we live in our own world, but I think that, you know, we all need to make that extra lift right now to try to reach across, get to know people who disagree with us, and understand where they're coming from. I think that could go some distance. All of that could go some distance toward healing this.
Events like you are having at Lehigh on Tuesday night, is that the kind of thing that we need? I mean, not just the anchor and managing editor of a national TV newscast, but a lot of people in their communities getting up and calling together people and saying, let's have a conversation and let's make sure that it is a civil conversation and that we can agree to disagree on some things.
No, I think absolutely that's what we need. We need, you know, more Americans. And again, I know everybody's busy. We have lives to lead. We've jobs, you know, children going to school, doing their homework. I mean, there's just so much going on in our lives. And I think that the media fills up all those empty spaces, whether it's, you know, radio, television, the internet, so that we're not spending as much time talking to people in our community, people who live down the street or down the hall from us. So I think we need to rethink community, in a sense, in America. I know it's easy for me to say that on Thursday morning in March of 2019, but I think it's something that more and more Americans can be thinking about. It's how do we come together and debate those issues differences that we legitimately have, but mainly how do we listen? How do we make sure that we don't assume the other person is has, you know, an ill intent, is coming from a place that we can ever respect and understand. I think that would go a long way toward pulling us together. I don't expect a Pollyanna kumbaya moment where, you know, we're all together, we're going to be 100%. Of course not. I mean, that's not who we are. That's not what this country is. But we can at least respect one another and listen to one another, because the rest of the world does look to the United States. And the more divided we are, I think it messes up the signal that Americans have sent for a long time, that Americans stand for tolerance, for freedom. And when we vilify one another, when we disrespect one another, I think that signal gets gets there's interference.
Let's try Bill in Lancaster again. Bill, Bill is not there. Okay, let's try AJ in Lancaster. AJ, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Mrs. Woodruff, I want to thank you for speaking to this issue because we have a lot of emphasis on a politics of fear and a rhetoric that perpetuates hatred. And it's really important for all of us to have a civil discourse because as we have a rise in xenophobia through a politics of fear, that can actually be a precipice and eventually lead to genocide, as has happened in Rwanda and Yugoslavia and in Germany prior to that. But I also want to ask you about having a national discourse about potential threats to humanity as a whole that we're not having on a national level as much in the United States.
Are you talking about climate change?
Go ahead.
Are you talking about climate change?
Well, climate change, one of them, but also we continue to go closer towards nuclear war and divisiveness within nations. And at a time where we're dealing with massive refugee crises and need to deal with migrating populations on a level that has never happened before, so populations are mixing.
AJ, thank you very much for your call. Ms. Woodruff, what about that?
Well, AJ raises some profoundly important issues that face not just our country but the whole world. I mean, the nuclear question is one that I think doesn't get enough attention. I was part of a session just a few days ago where we were reminded that the United States and Russia still have hundreds of nuclear warheads deployed that right now we're not planning to use them, but the fact that they still exist should be alarming to many people, and of course the possibility of rogue nations and rogue individuals getting hold of nuclear weapons. That's something we all need to pay attention to. He mentioned the refugee crises that have become, in a way, the signature issue of the early part of this of the second decade of this century. So he's absolutely right. But in order to address these issues in a sensible, smart, and humane way that we want to, we need to be able to sit down and talk to each other and not be reduced to labels and something that an epithet that we're ready to call the people who disagree with us. We need to be able to sit down and have a conversation and talk these things through. That's what's been made harder by the division that we are living through now.
Judy Woodruff is the anchor and managing editor of PBS's The News Hour. You see her every night here at 6 o'clock on WITF-TV. Judy Woodruff, it's been an honor. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it, Scott. It's great to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to visiting Lehi next week.
Next Tuesday night. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Listen tomorrow on Smart Talk as we talk about car insurance rates in Pennsylvania. There was a recent survey that was put out that compared rates around Pennsylvania and really around the country. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. Also, the 80th anniversary of the Carlisle Theater, that's coming up tomorrow. You can visit our website or get an outlook of conversations we're working on. Plus, you can leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. An iconic TV public service announcement from the 1970s featured a Native American with a tear rolling down his cheek after seeing trash along a highway. Litter and efforts to prevent motorists and residents from tossing their trash to the side of the road or dumping it in the woods was a major focus of the environmental movement then. Americans caught on, but it still doesn't prevent littering. Last year, the Pocono Mountains Visitors Bureau launched an anti-littering campaign called Pick Up the Poconos, and it picked up momentum. Joining us to tell us more about Pick Up the Poconos and possibly going beyond just the Poconos is Chris Barrett, President and CEO of the Pocono Mountain Visitors Bureau. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, 1-800-729-7532. Chris, I have to say that, you know, I referenced that iconic public service announcement from the 1970s and litter, throwing trash out of a car, dumping it in the woods. Those were all things that were major focuses in the 1970s of the environmental movement. Now, today, so many other things have taken their places when we talk about the environment, but you still can drive along the road and see trash strewn along the side or, you know, other places. So that's the backdrop of where we are today. What prompted the Visitors Bureau to set off on this campaign of picking up the Poconos?
Unfortunately, Scott, everything you said is right, and that's really what prompted us to do what we did, just by what you said. We had noticed the same thing, and being stewards of the Pocono Mountains and the environment within the Pocono Mountains and marketing and advertising it, we thought, you know, if we don't care about it and try to do something, and don't try to do something, who will? So we stepped up, we got the community involved, and it's interesting that you mentioned that iconic Native American spot. We actually put our own TV spot together, put a radio spot together. So we embarked on a huge awareness campaign. After the awareness campaign ran, then we started to get people in the community coming to us, and we decided we were going to rally the community to begin to start picking up trash, because that's really something everyone can do. There's so many problems in society that are so overwhelming. Individuals feel like, well, you know, if I can't do anything about that. Litter is something everyone can absolutely do something about. So it really rallied the community in a way that was really heartwarming. And now we've just proliferated this program to 8 additional counties, and it continues to grow.
In fact, let me play one of those commercials that you referenced.
These are the sounds of the Pocono Mountains. We know you can't see them, but they're just as beautiful to see as they are to hear. Sometimes people don't appreciate the surroundings of the Poconos. How? By littering. This has become a problem on our mountains, creeks, and highways. When you're in this majestic place, remember, you can help. Go to pickupthepoconos.com.
Well, that paints a nice picture in people's minds, just hearing it on the radio, and there was television involved, too. As you said, Chris, this started off as, if I recall, and tell me if this is accurate, it's just like a 6-week campaign of public service announcements, you know, some pick up the trash campaigns, but it has grown so much more. Talk about its beginnings and where you are now.
So you're correct. From the beginning, it began as an awareness campaign, and just our staff actually adopting certain portions of highways around and in the Pocono Mountains. So then we organized a day, and last year it was September 29th. We recruited 400 volunteers, and 11 of the 20 counties in Monroe County, which is one of the premier counties in the Pocono Mountains. So we got everybody together, all the township supervisors, school board members, and supplied them with everything that they needed and partnered with Waste Management and a couple of other organizations like Beautify Pennsylvania, who supplied us with everything, and of course PennDOT. And then we just spent the whole day picking up trash on roadways that we designated. And at the end of the day, we picked up close to 800 bags of trash that translated into many, many tons of trash that were on our roadways.
So one of the reasons that we did want to talk to you, I mean, the Pocono Mountains, obviously close to central Pennsylvania for people who travel to the Poconos, but that you would like to see this go beyond just the Pocono Mountains, correct?
Absolutely. And yesterday, and this is the first time this is really public, there'll be more to come, we recruited 8 additional counties around us that are very close to the Poconos that are going to jump in on this program. First is the awareness part of it. We're hoping that they proliferate it to their concerned citizens to be able to organize days, if it's around Earth Day or around any day that they really pick. But also we talked about the awareness piece in schools. So we want to go to school districts, and we kind of want to start, and again, it takes folks that are really concerned about this, but recruit folks and give them tools to be able to, you know, start kids at a younger age to realize that if you throw something or leave something within the environment and don't dispose of it properly, it doesn't go away in a week or a month. It could take years or even hundreds of years for that to biodegrade.
One of the results of that TV commercial from, or that public service announcement, I should say, from the early 70s, and it's not just that one, there were other campaigns as well, anti-littering campaigns, was that Americans became much more aware. They did become educated that this was not a good thing. Do not throw your trash out of your car window or along the road from your house or, you know, anyway, dump it in the woods or anything like that. So much so that I think so many people realized it was not the thing to do. So why are so many people still doing it?
That's a really good question. It's a behavioral issue. And, you know, we have to really kind of get into that process again. And if you're in it, and this is one thing we found out by organizing these events, when people actually get out there and pick litter, they're much more cognizant of it, number one, and what it looks like and what it does to the environment. But other than that, they'll tell people, hey, don't litter. You know, it's not really the right thing to do. I spent 3 hours outside on roadways picking it up because people weren't careful. And I'll never forget when I worked for Hershey Entertainment Resorts for 20 years, and our mantra was always clean and green. Whether you were a first-day employee or the CEO of the company, when you walked something past trash, you picked it up. And I asked the general manager my first day there when I was 25, 24, somewhere there. I said, why do we do this all the time, and why is it part of our DNA? And his answer was, you know, in the 60s, people used to throw trash all over the place, and he said, I don't know who they thought was going to pick it up, but that's just what it was until that spot ran. Then people really started to see that, you know, there's a whole mantra of issues that come with littering. You know, a lot of it is even self-esteem. When people see litter, they think it's a good place. They think, oh, there's litter there, I'll just throw mine. But think about what it does to the people who live there. It really kind of degrades the community. It's the broken window theory. You know, if there's a broken window on the street, no one fixes it. People think it's okay to break windows or tag properties and litter. So it feeds upon itself. It's a behavioral issue.
Well, Chris, and you know, that's how we got to know each other, with your time in Hershey.
Yeah.
But that is something that you're bringing up here is so important. Litter, I mean, when you're looking at it from a tourism point of view and a marketing point of view, you don't want people to see trash along the road into the area in which you're trying to entice people to visit. That's one thing. But what you keep hitting on is so true. The environmental aspects of this. We know so much more today than we did, say, 50 years ago about how wildlife is impacted by the crap that is tossed out of a window, especially in the waterways. And so many of these things that don't break down aren't biodegradable, that make their way into our streams and rivers, and the impact it has on fish and other wildlife. I mean, everything you do, there's an impact afterwards. So that piece of paper you're tossing out of your window, you may not think much about it, but it could have an impact on another person or wildlife or the environment.
Absolutely. So sometimes you'll drive along a roadway and you'll look and you'll see plastic bags and trees and they look like small kites. Oh, it just drives me crazy. That takes 450 years for that bag to biodegrade. So even in the 70s, when that commercial came about, we keep referencing that because I think it's very important. A lot of what businesses used was paper. You know, bags were paper, straws were paper. So now that petroleum's been introduced for a number of different reasons, it takes a tremendous amount of time to biodegrade those types of products. And I was surprised that glass bottles, broken glass bottles or full glass bottles, it takes over 1,000 years to biodegrade. And they're easily recyclable and easily reusable. So I think those are things people just don't realize. And in Pennsylvania, the Pocono Mountains in particular, we have the most waterways, or we're one of the areas that have the most waterways in the state. Our fishing is great. And there are many rivers across Pennsylvania. So I look at it as a broader issue for the Commonwealth. People love to fish and hunt and hike all over the Commonwealth. So that even makes it more critical that we're good stewards of the land that we've inherited.
So, as I said, you would like to take this program nationally. How do you plan to do that, or do you have plans to do that?
We do. So we've been having a lot of conversations. One thing I have to say is the board of the Pocono Mountains Visitors Bureau has been very supportive. They've been in the hospitality industry for years. We host 27.7 million people a year, so they understand that, you know, this is something that we really have to show leadership on. So we're talking to all of our colleagues within Pennsylvania who operate other convention and visitors bureaus. That's our first step. We also want to, we're going to shoot some more public PSA spots for television and radio. We want to start those in Pennsylvania first. We've also talked to the governor's office and DCED and PennDOT, and they've all been very supportive. And I understand there's a huge amount of issues out there right now that they're grappling with. So we're trying to do the best we can to coordinate everything on the ground and help. And they're coming right alongside of us because they understand that it's a problem too. And Pennsylvania is one of the states, and along with New York and a few others, where hospitality and tourism is a major industry. So just in the Poconos alone, we generate $3.9 billion in economic benefit. That translates into millions and millions of dollars in tax benefit for the Commonwealth to the general fund. So it indirectly, it funds a lot of state programs. So I think they have caring concern, but they're also very concerned about the environment, too, as we all are.
I have to ask this question, Chris. When you have gone out and collected trash from the side of the road, what's the strangest or weirdest things that maybe you haven't found particular, but you have heard that someone has found?
Oh, gosh, I've seen everything. You name it. In picking myself, predominantly it's all bottles, and plastic bottles, cigarette butts, and we found full bags of trash. We found bags of clothing that have all types of different art. We found a bag of old clothing that had period type clothing in it that it must have been like from the 30s and 40s. So, and it was in a plastic bag along the roadside. We found all types of things. In fact, Camelback Mountain adopts a highway portion that leads up to their property. A lot of our properties, they adopt their own highways because they understand how important that presence is. And they have a contest every year as to who finds the strangest item. So they make it real fun.
Yeah.
So do we, too.
A little competition always helps. We have about 2 minutes left, Chris. And by the way, we had a listener call in, Kay, who mentioned that there is a law about littering. We see those green signs from time to time that says $300 fine or $500 fine if you're convicted of littering. So there's another motivation not to toss trash out anyway. But I couldn't let you get away, Chris, without talking about your Pocono Mountain magazine that has been airing on TV stations here in central Pennsylvania. Just very, very well done. And I mean, it's not like your normal 30-second commercial. You and Ashley just do a fantastic job.
Yeah, she's great. She's awesome to work with. And she loves the Pocono Mountains just as much as we do. It's a great format because there's so much to offer and we can tell a story. So just instead of a standard 15 or 30-second commercial, we actually shoot the two-minute commercials, and we feature people in the Pocono Mountains who are actually providing hospitality benefit. So if you visit, you can actually meet an owner, you know, because those are the people that we're featuring in the spots or someone who works at one of the properties. And we actually have our own television channel, the Pocono Television Network, that runs on Blue Ridge Cable, but it's also on our website at PoconoMountains.com. And we do some longer content format in case folks are just interested in seeing. It is really beautiful. The Poconos is a beautiful place, and there's so much there to do. And it's close.
Well, it really is. But I look forward to them. I mean, I as I'm watching local newscasts, most of them come up during local newscasts. I look forward to them. I always perk up, and you know, maybe I'm a nerd that way. But
I'm just trying to be like Scott Lamar, and you know, all the great people at WITF. Like, I'm Tim Lambert, WITF News. I would say that to him every time I see him.
Chris Barrett is the president and CEO of the Pocono Mountain Visitors
Visitor Bureau. Chris, thank you very much for being with us
today. Thank you so much, Scott. This was good to catch up with you, too.
All right. We'll see you later. And just a reminder, you know, just what Chris has been talking about, please don't. We're not trying to preach, but, you know, if you have a trash... I mean, I have to say that I end up keeping a wrapper or something in my car, and the day later when it's still there and I haven't thrown it out, my wife will complain about how dirty the car is. But I'd rather do that and have the choice of throwing it out than throwing it alongside the road. So think about that. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about car insurance rates here in Pennsylvania, also the 80th anniversary of the Carlisle Theater. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Have yourself a good day. I'm Scott Lamar.